You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, like the dude just said, here on Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. So we're going to the phones right now. I've got a caller here, State Senator Sam Gavan. He serves right here in the Huntsville area in State Senate District 7. He's also an attorney practicing in this area. He's been in office now since 2018. He has served in state party and county party politics for quite a while. And State Senator Gavan, we are glad you're with us. Welcome to Right Side Radio.
I'm glad to be here. I'm just rolling into downtown Huntsville on my way back from Montgomery.
Well, you've been down there on Goat Hill going through all the machinations that happened in a special session. And Senator, I'll be honest with you, I was saying earlier, it almost feels like this special session is no longer about districting. It feels like it's about vaccination mandates. I mean, what's your perspective on that?
I would largely agree with you as far as the Senate is map is concerned, and the Board of Education map, which are the two that are starting in the Senate for sure. I also feel that way about the the congressional map. The House of Representatives map, I don't know. It could have some fluidity to it.
Well, and I'm hearing that. In fact, I've talked to several people who were either already running and then now realize they're no longer in the district they thought they were running for, or their house district has changed or something, you know, along those lines. But let's talk a minute about vaccine mandates. So I've explained already for the half hour prior to this this call what it takes to have a special session, the fact that the governor issues a call, but it does not limit the legislature from considering other things as long as they've got two-thirds vote to get it passed. That being said, there were six bills dropped in the Senate yesterday dealing with the question of vaccine mandates. I know one of them was yours. One of them you also were the second co-sponsor on, Senator Elliott's bill. What is your thought on getting those out of the Senate, first of all, or in getting one of them down to the House?
Well, we've got, Orr dropped another one that I co-sponsored that was largely at the request of the Attorney General. It was the Attorney General's language, and that was to kind of put some teeth, if you will, in our passport.
Excellent.
Ban on vaccine passports. Last time it didn't have any teeth in it, putting some teeth in there, and I think that will take care of a number of things. So, I feel good about getting this out of the Senate, and I think I know what was said too about what was said at caucus in the House, but I feel like movement is taking place there. I think with dropping all these bills, some synergy was created, and there was kind of awareness of yeah, we've got an issue here. We've got a lot of senators hearing from their constituents, and then I had House members calling me yesterday wanting to copy my bill. And of course, as I understand, others as well. And so, you know, we're picking up support in the House.
Well, and that's what I've seen, and you know, I'm hearing just through my own sources that the Speaker of the House, of course, has already stated openly, and I've seen that. I quoted that from a Yellowhammer article earlier, that he originally was saying that he did not intend to see anything outside the call come to the House floor, which could be seen as just, you know, trying to sort of stymie the flow here and put a you know, finger in the dike, I guess is what I'm saying. But I'm hearing that the House had a caucus meeting last night. Maybe you said this, but your phone broke up slightly. But the House had a caucus meeting last night, and that the mood seems to have changed, and the Speaker is aware that the members of the body want to see something that they can send to the governor. And is that what you're hearing also in the House now?
I didn't hear about a, quote, caucus meeting. I just had a House member call me specifically asking to join in with my bill. And I think that, you know, we're just hearing more and more rumbles from, you know, different members that they wanted to see something happen. So I think that's just building some synergy with all the bills that we dropped in the Senate yesterday.
Well, I think that's good. Now, I'm looking right now. I've got a copy in front of me right now of the one that was dropped in. I don't have yours per se, but I've seen text of it before, but I don't have it in front of me at the moment. The one I've got in front of me right now is actually Senator Elliott's bill. which I also know was copied in the House as well. But one thing I do note in this particular bill, which is the one that deals with religious and medical exemptions, which I think is good. I think if you accentuate those issues and make it pretty much a shall versus a may in terms of granting the exemption, you're going to provide that way out for people that have a conscientious objection to it. However, I don't see any teeth in that bill. Like, what's the enforcement mechanism? And have y'all considered the possibility of needing an amendment to make sure it's enforceable?
Well, first of all, I think all these things are going to go through a more of a vetting process as we go through committees. I also think that here's what I would guess is going to happen. My guess is that you're going to see a couple of bills kind of selected. And mine is in the mix for that discussion, at least, to go in and sort of take the best of different bills and move forward. And so I think that's what's going to happen, and we'll see sort of a some supersized bills, if you will, I guess, or you know, because I've already seen some things I want to change in my bill to be make it very clear that no one under 14 can get a vaccine. No minor under current law can get this vaccine without the permission of a parent or guardian. And it says that clearly in the preamble, but it does not say that so clearly in the body of the bill. So there's still some cleanup work to be done.
Well, and I think that's good because, Senator, I know you've been driving back from Montgomery, but even while you're driving, just literally while you're driving, it's just been announced that breaking news is that the FDA has now approved a shot for ages 5 to 11. And you know what's going to happen. There's going to be some school districts that are going to set up, you know, the opportunity to get your shot at school, and kids are going to get a shot having no idea, and mom and dad aren't going to have any idea, and it's going to create issues. So I think your bill definitely has merit in terms of addressing the issue of minors, too. So good on you for that. Go ahead.
The Elliott bill does a better job on the religious and medical exemptions than my bill does. And then, you know, there's some things that Ulrich's bill does better and some things that my bill does better. And so I think we just got to work through those issues and, you know, and get the cream of the crop and move it forward.
Well, and I agree. I think at some point you wind up seeing a substitute for one of them on the floor that does the best of all of the above. And I hope that's the case. So these things are going to come through committee. Are they going right now, procedurally speaking, are they going to one committee just to make it easier, or are they spread out all over different committees for next week?
I think they're going to stick with general fund, and I'm not sure the reason for that other than that's the one that has handled things so far, and just to kind of keep one committee going at this time.
Okay. Are you on the general fund committee yourself?
I am not, but Senator Butler is.
Okay. All right. So you're basically, did we lose him? Are you there, Sam? Copper, did we lose Sam Gavan? Yeah, I think we did. Well, dadgum. I know he was driving. So that, Copper, you can grab the mic. Just grab the mic. So did we lose him just then? He's back. Senator Gavan, you back on the line with us?
I am.
Okay, I know you're driving right now. You probably hit a pocket. We're going to hit a break here in about 2 minutes, so we'll just, if you can stay with us for about two more minutes here. How far did we get before we cut off just then? Committee structure?
Yeah, we were talking about general fund is where those were going.
And I think you said Senator Butler from this listening area is also on the general fund committee.
On that committee. That's not a committee I'm on.
Okay, and that committee is going to wind up convening on Monday to consider this and all the other bills too. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. So then the earliest it could get to the floor, I assume y'all will go in just to get the second reading, if nothing else, of bills on Monday, and then you guys will actually have a chance for floor debate on Tuesday, I would guess. Is that right?
That's correct. And, of course, Monday we'll deal with the reapportionment on the floor.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you guys got your hands full. I mean, it's a special session, which means you typically go down there thinking you got one thing, but I'll be honest with you. I think that the vast majority of the state right now is not even paying attention to the district lines so much as they are whether you're going to get something done on vaccine mandates, and so I wish you the best on that.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too, man. That was State Senator Sam Gavan calling in from the road as he's driving back from Montgomery. And literally what we're hearing right there, folks, as we head to the short break here, but literally what you're hearing right there is that there is movement right now to get a bill through the legislature the Senate right now is apparently the body that has, you know, and of course there's only 35 senators compared to 105 House members, but there's 35 senators, of which 20 have already co-sponsored one of the major bills. And he just pointed out, and I think it's going to be true, and that's my experience too, is they're going to wind up seeing the different components of some of the best bills. I was really glad to hear another one was dropped in today that included language for the Attorney General to strengthen the vaccine passport bill that we already have. That's great. And if we're looking at doing these things, I think we're going to come out with some potentially robust legislation, and it will be on the House to pass it next week, and then it will be on the governor to sign it hopefully by week's end. All right, Copper, let's head towards that short break. And folks, that's the machinations of what it takes to get something done in Montgomery. And I know that some of you right now are clamoring for House Bill 31. House Bill 31 is not going to be in the mix this week. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right now. So what you need to be looking at is what they are working on, and tell them what you think your refinements should be. Contact your legislator and say, whatever you do, pass something that does these things. Don't just say, we want House Bill 31, because it doesn't work that way. Because House Bill 31 might die in a pile, but you can still get the exact same done or more in another bill. So do not let the quest for the so-called perfect be the thing that stands in the way of the good. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We will be right back. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, let me tell you about National Christian Foundation. Have you heard their ads on the show? Listen, National Christian Foundation is so cool. So Charlene and I use this, right? What you do is you streamline your charitable giving by using National Christian Foundation as the conduit for which you give to various other entities. All right, let's say you want to, you know, tithe to your church, and you've got other charities you support like we do, and you go ahead and you give it all in one place. You put it in National Christian Foundation, who manages it like a money portfolio, and it grows interest and does those things. And then when you're ready, all you do is go on their website and click give, 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 and give. And you wind up sending the checks out straight from there. What it does for you, though, too, is it allows the growth of your charitable giving. It allows the ease of having a single document to go with your taxes later on, because they themselves are a 501c3. It also allows you, by the way, to go ahead and shelter those funds in advance. Let's say you sell your house and you've got a windfall of funds. You want to get that tax deduction right away before you have a chance to have any capital gains or anything else attached. So you put the money, part of the money, into National Christian Foundation, but you don't know yet where you're going to grant it out. You don't know who you're going to give it to. And so you can sit there for 6 months because you've already claimed the tax deduction by giving it to NCF. And then, lo and behold, 6 months later, you go, you know what? My church has got a building project, or that charity's doing a great thing, or United Way's got some cool stuff happening. And you just contact them and say, send it. And they do. It works just as easy. National Christian Foundation. Go check them out at ncfgiving.com/Alabama. ncfgiving.com/Alabama. All right, listen, we're going to switch gears here on the Triple Dipper. And I got to tell you, as I'm winding up that last topic, because usually the number one thing on the Triple Dipper, in this case it was a special session, is rocking, is usually the biggest topic. And I got to tell you, I've been down there in Montgomery, and I chew on you guys sometimes, but I got to applaud the fact that the legislature has decided to actively engage this topic. Good on you. And I know, by the way, and a lot of folks don't realize, they signed up for it, but they're all putting aside their day jobs, if you will, to go down there and do this thing that takes up an inordinate amount of time. So kudos to y'all. Get her done, fellas. I mean, this is going to be good. The men and women of the Alabama legislature, you guys can do this, and I'm applauding you in the process. All right, we're going to switch gears. Copper, I didn't even give you any warning at all, but can you get clip one ready? Clip one. Let me know if you got it.
Okay.
Clip one. I know Copper's like, oh, shoot, he didn't tell me. But so clip one is sort of going to lead off where we're going next. Biden's agenda is in disarray. And it's because there's an attitude in D.C. right now that everybody else's money is D.C.'s money. and that everybody else's attitude of why they can't spend more money is just appalling to them. And why should they not be allowed to go ahead and direct your spending the way they want to direct it? And why should they not have more of your money? And how dare you think that you should be allowed to have no taxation on unrealized capital gains and all these things? It's amazing. It's like an attitude of complete entitlement on the part of government. Well, Congressman Byron Donalds, and I'm becoming a big fan of his, by the way. I think he's a freshman member of Congress from Florida. Just solid as a rock. Well, yesterday he excoriated members of Congress because they had been beating up on executives who were there to testify from the big oil companies. Now, I know you're going, oh, it's big oil. Yeah, but you know what? At some point, they're still private citizens, and at some point, they're still private sector businesses. Listen to what he had to say. Copper, play clip one.
First of all, to the witnesses, the leaders of Exxon, Chevron, BP, Shell, I know that the climate activists in Twitter world, which Dave Chappelle says doesn't exist, and he's right because it's just people who have nothing better to do but type on their keyboards, and we do it too here in Congress. But let's be very clear, you need an apology, because what I witnessed today was just rank intimidation by the chair of this committee. Trying to get you to pledge on what you're going to spend your money on is a gross violation of the First Amendment. And just because we're members of Congress and we got microphones and we pass laws does not mean that we also have the ability to infringe on your ability to organize, whether it's API or anybody else, or what you choose to spend your money on. It is disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. Somebody needs to go call Merrick Garland, tell him to get in here and watch the intimidation that came from this very panel today. Because this is not about defending big oil or defending big anything. It's about defending the ability of people in our country to be free, say what they want, think what they want, spend their money how they choose. And if we're not going to be any better than the Chinese, how do we ever expect to beat them on the world stage when we're cutting our neck when it comes to energy production, while they are burning more coal, they are burning more oil, they're increasing their emissions, and they're not showing up in Scotland? You know why they're not showing up in Scotland? Because they're interested in building an economy. They're interested in becoming the dominant economic player across the globe. They're interested in becoming the dominant military player across the globe. And while we joke around and mess around intimidating you guys, who frankly heat our homes, you cool our fridges, you keep our cars going, this is insane. So I'm sorry for you. And I'm sorry for the people in our country who have to witness shenanigans like this and witness circuses like this. That's why they call
there
that one show on HBO,
you
whatever
can go
it is.
Ahead and stop it there, Copper. That is awesome. I want every bit of that engraved in marble. I want to hang that on the wall and frame it. I want that to be something that every child has to memorize in school. I want that to be something that's codified, that minstrels will sing of that particular moment. I'm just telling you right now, that's the kind of thing that we need said more often. Love it. That guy sounds like a Right Side ruffian, doesn't he? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're going to come back and talk about that kind of attitude. And yet we're also seeing the Biden agenda falling apart because of their own internal feuds. And I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. I talked right up through the music last time. I just got fired up and kept talking. Hey, listen, we're going to move into the next topic of the Triple Dipper, all right? Before I do that, though, let me tell you real quick about my friends at eTax Breaks. eTax Breaks, what? Can you imagine having a job where all you get to do every single day is call up people and say, hey, found you some money? That's what they do. 23 years of experience, and I know these people personally, by the way. What they do is they literally look at your business. How do you run it? Where did you place it? Who did you hire? Did you stay open during the pandemic? Did you survive a natural disaster? And any number of other things that you don't even know qualify you for monies just because. I mean, you're just doing what you do because it's common sense, right? Next thing you know, turns out it equates to money, because there's like over 3,000 programs around the nation that give out grants, tax breaks, tax incentives, and they do all these things for businesses just like you. And by the way, etaxbreaks.com, they do not get paid unless they find you money. And in July, they found over $7 million in found money for their clients in 1 month. I'm just telling you. Check them out. They got a special website just for our Right Side listeners. It's etaxbreaks.com/right side. etaxbreaks.com/right side. All right, so listen, we're moving up in the triple dipper here. All right, number one, special session was rocking. Number two now, the Biden agenda is in disarray, and I am loving it. All right, so the Biden agenda is in disarray. And when I say that, understand that what we're looking at here is he's doing such a horrible job. His polling numbers are at all-time lows. They are the lowest polling numbers of any president since World War II. What? Yes. That's pretty rough. When you consider there's been things like, you know, presidents during the Vietnam War and situations during the civil rights movement that caused all kinds of turmoil, and you've got civil unrest, you've got wartime scenarios, all these things have happened. The Biden administration is at an all-time low across the board. Well, yesterday, Biden himself, President Biden, went over to the legislature. You know, as an attorney, let me tell you this. As an attorney, I try to never have a witness on the stand unless I already believe that I know what the witness is going to say. Because the last thing you want to do is get caught off guard with things you didn't expect. Well, the same is sort of true about putting the boss across a street, if you know what I mean. Biden's handlers have got to know that when they send him across a street, if it's not effective, it looks like they don't care what he thinks. Well, that's what happened. So yesterday, for the second time, President Joe Biden went across the street to Capitol Hill to personally urge Democrats. I'm looking at a story right now. This is from Business Insider out this morning. He traveled to Capitol Hill to personally urge Democrats to end their squabbling and get behind the latest special social spending framework that he unveiled on Thursday. Remember the $3.5 trillion bill? Well, it's down to only $1.75 now. It's only $1.75. In fact, Business Insider, it cracks me up. They call it a skinny package. Skinny. $1.75 trillion. Well, I think it was Gutfeld. Yeah, it was. It was Gutfeld on Fox said last night. He said that one of the funny things about this is they have trained the people of the United States to believe that $1.75 trillion is actually small. But nonetheless, Biden urged them, and he told them. Here's what one source said that he told House Democrats. Quote, "I don't think it's hyperbole to say that the House and the Senate majorities and my presidency will be determined by what happens in the next week." In other words, he's laying it on the line. Well, if you remember Nancy Pelosi, who is like, you know, known for working wonders and counting the votes, she had set yesterday as the deadline, actually today as the deadline for getting that bill to the floor again. And she pulled it. She pulled the plug, according to Business Insider, on a House vote for Biden's infrastructure bill for the second time because progressives have threatened to sink it. So story on Fox right now, all highlighted here. This is what you call a political tease. A political tease is when you tell somebody, "I like that thing you've got. If you'll help me with what I've got first, I might be able to help you with that." That's a political tease. I saw that kind of junk in Montgomery all the time. "Hey, if you can help me on my bill, help me out on my bill, man. I'll be there for you when you get yours to the floor." And then they work around behind you and get your bill amended. It's not even what you wanted anymore. Meantime, you helped them. Bang. Wrong. Well, that's exactly what the Progressive Caucus is doing. The Progressive Caucus threw out a major political tease yesterday. They came out and said, "Members of our caucus will not vote for the infrastructure bill without the Build Back Better Act." In other words, they don't want that smaller. They don't want that smaller bill that came down from the Senate that actually builds roads and bridges and internet. They want the one that has all the social welfare spending in it. They want all the progressive crap. So they say, "Members of our caucus will not vote for the infrastructure bill without the Build Back Better Act. We will work immediately to finalize and pass both pieces of legislation," but they want theirs first. But then they threw out the political tease. They basically said, "But you know what? We kind of like your new version, down from 3.5 to 1.75, just so you know. I think we like it." Well, there it is. The article from Fox says Congresswoman Jayapal, who is the chair of the Progressive Caucus, and her members endorsed the framework for the reconciliation bill that President Biden released Thursday morning, which would cost $1.75 trillion. What that is saying is they're trying to tease it out and say, "We think we can get that passed with you if you'll give us ours first." Well, Copper, go ahead and clip six, still ready? Okay, so clip six is Chris Wallace being interviewed on Fox, discussing the fact that the Biden presidency actually is in jeopardy. When President Biden says, "My presidency and the majorities in the House and Senate may be on the line," experts are saying, yeah, he may be right. Play clip six.
I think the Biden presidency is now after yesterday and then last night.
Well, not in good shape. And the fact of the matter is that Joe Biden doesn't have enough juice, not with Republicans. He doesn't have enough juice with his own party. Because remember, this has nothing to do with Republicans. This is something that his party could do. He doesn't have enough juice with his own party. That's twice now in a month that he's gone up to the Hill, met with the House Democratic Caucus, pleaded with them to pass the infrastructure bill, and in effect said, I'm going to cover you. I've got your back on this big tax and spend. I guess it's now down to $1.75 trillion. And as you just saw in Chad's piece, the left wing of the party, that's not enough for them. You know, I've been covering Washington, Bill, for 40 years, and you don't put the president in a room, maybe with a foreign lady you do, but not with certainly not with members of his own party, unless you know what the result is going to be. And you normally know the result because either people are too supportive of him or too scared of him to buck him. But that's not true with Joe Biden. He goes up there and he says, my presidency and the House and Senate Democratic majorities will be determined by what happens, he said, in the next week. But he really wanted it yesterday, and they ignore him. They give him the back of their hand. So that's not a good sign for a president when he doesn't have enough juice within the members of his own party to get an important bill passed.
All right.
There you go. There you go. That's pretty much exactly what I just said. The Biden agenda is in disarray right now. In disarray right now. The fact that Chris Wallace says in 40 years of doing this, he knows that when you watch this thing happen, it's almost as if they heard him speak and yawned. And then he left the room and they went, eh, no. And that's exactly what happened. They could care less. They are asserting themselves as a separate branch of government right now. And the president appears to be feckless to get what he wants. He wanted, remember, a $3.5 trillion package full of goodies. Actually, what he wanted was, if you remember, originally he wanted a major spending bill that had over $5 trillion in estimated costs. Some 19 or so moderate Republicans joined with Democrats in the Senate to carve out the true infrastructure pieces into a separate $1.5 trillion bill. They passed it in the Senate, sent it down to the House. Okay, that happened. Well, then everybody thinks, okay, we can get that part done. Nope. Then the progressives said, well, here we are. And they say, we want all the other stuff. And so the Senate says, we ain't helping you with that. So they say, hey, Nancy Pelosi, let's start it here and send it upstairs or send it over across the way to the Senate. Well, they can't get an agreement. And so now Biden's original ask for $5 trillion is broken into two bills. One of them was $3.5 trillion. It's now whittled down to $1.75. And he can't get it passed. He can't get anything passed because the progressives are saying, no, we don't want to do it. So, Copper, I got one that you saw that I labeled clip 2.5. You saw that, I guess? Yeah. So clip 2.5, Jesse Waters on the 5 give a pretty solid analysis of where this sits right now for Biden. Go ahead and play clip 2.5.
I don't think the strategy worked. I think it was a total mess, and I hope I'm wrong, but I do think they're going to get something passed within the next 5 days so they give Joe a win overseas so he can beat his chest to the world, and they got to get something done under the wire before that election on Tuesday, too. So the media is now going to write this story. This is the comeback kid, and that's just going to be an inside the Beltway story, though, because for the rest of the American people, this two-headed monster of a bill is not going to affect them in a positive way, especially in the short term. Does nothing for the border or inflation, does nothing for the supply chain, and does not create jobs. If anything, the Democrats are going to own inflation when they're spending trillions on top of what we already have right now. They already own the border crisis, and they're slipping in this bill. I did read some of it, Greg. Amnesty for 10 million illegal immigrants. They are going to own high gas prices because they slipped in a little Green New Deal here. And they're going to own the weak recovery because they're going to raise taxes higher than it's ever been done before. In a couple years, you may have government-run daycare in a couple once they get that off the ground. But in the near term, private daycare is going to skyrocket because they're going to have to compete with this new program. And then what? Maybe in 1 year, they're going to have a few electric car charging stations. Great. Only 2% of us own an electric vehicle, so that's not really that great. Some of the spending's good. You know, you want Wi-Fi and nice railroads and less traffic, but a lot of this is just doubling down on the boondoggle of bankrupt programs like Medicaid and Medicare, which aren't really doing that well right now. So this country is going to sit around, what, for the next couple days and watch a bunch of untalented politicians bad at arithmetic, try to raise taxes so they can square the numbers to see if they can pay for stuff that no one wants or needs. That's basically what we're watching right now.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. What an amazing quote that was, and I loved it. In that same discussion, by the way, Katie Pavlich actually said, Joe Biden's on the verge of being a lame duck president. Can you imagine being called a lame duck president? I mean, in political terms, you might as well just slapped him in the face. That is that if Biden cannot get this passed, and then you add in Afghanistan. By the way, Afghanistan ain't going away. I think we're on day 76 since we abandoned Americans. And then if you add in there the vaccine mandates that are crushing people's souls right now with losing their jobs, and if you add in there the fact that inflation is up at 5.3%, which is a 13-year high, and if you add in there, by the way, that we've got a supply chain that is jacked up because of the way that he has handled COVID recovery, I'm just telling you, people, he owns every bit of this. Every bit of it. Let's go to a short break. We're going to wrap up this section right here because the Biden agenda is in disarray, and I got a little bit more on that we're going to go into. And then top of the hour, you're going to want to hang around. I got my buddy Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty is going to call in. We're going to talk about when a state fights the federal government, how well does it work? And oh, by the way, there was a judicial decision yesterday out of the federal district courts in D.C. that seems to be having an impact on whether or not people in the military have to take a shot. I'll tell you more about that later. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Friday afternoon, 3:54 p.m. Winding down this segment, the Triple Dipper coverage right now is on the fact that the Biden agenda is in disarray. Now, let me tell you, here's the other political side of this, all right? So, yes, am I glad that Biden's spending bill is getting crushed? Yes. Am I glad that people are taking note of the fact that he is literally leading the government down the wrong path? Yes. Do I see this playing out in a variety of factors? Sure, I do. It's playing out right now in foreign policy. It's playing out right now in economic policy. It's playing out in military policy. And it's playing out right now in terms of healthcare policy. And here's the other thing. It's playing out in terms of his own personal power. Because what we are seeing right now is his polling numbers are sinking. If he had high polling numbers and an aggressive personality or a strong personality and a sense that people saw him having a command of the issues, I would bet that the House Democrats would be more in line. They see him as a wounded individual. They see him as someone they don't necessarily want to hitch their wagon to. And here's the other thing that that does. Is it causes ripple effects throughout. When you know the deal. When you drop that pebble in the pond, you watch the ripples go out from there. What we're seeing right now is that President Biden's sinking in the polls and inability to handle things well up to this point are literally having ripple effects across the board. And what we're seeing right now, for instance, here's the thing. Next Tuesday is an election in Virginia. Are you watching this? It's considered to be a bellwether. It's considered to be one of those races that is an indicator of where things are going in the big picture. Terry McAuliffe, longtime Democrat, Clinton advisor, been there, done that in the Democrat Party. You know, he had the whole blackface scandal and all that kind of stuff. And he's running against a Republican named Glenn Youngkin. Well, Glenn Youngkin has been working his way up in the polls slowly and steadily. A few days ago, McAuliffe called in President Obama. He's called in all kinds of other heavyweights. Vice President Kamala Harris did a video address to churches all over the state that was actually played during services, believe it or not. All of this to say, McAuliffe brought in what was considered to be and should be, you would think, the top of the ticket, the big man. And Joe Biden went to Virginia and campaigned for Terry McAuliffe. Got on stage, did what he could to rally the crowd. Well, you've seen how that works. And all of a sudden, within days thereafter, Youngkin is now leading in the polls. A recent poll put out by Fox says that they've got it right now. Within the margin of error is 3 points. What they've got, though, is that Youngkin is now leading by 8 points in their poll. And their poll, by the way, has showed Youngkin in the past down. He was down 51-46 just a couple weeks ago in the same poll. It's now McAuliffe 45, Youngkin 53 in the same poll that had McAuliffe winning by 5 points a few weeks ago. And so what we're looking at right now is a polar shift. So here's the deal. If all of this happens in D.C. and his own party won't listen to him when he goes over and pleads for spending bills in Afghanistan and supply chain and inflation and energy lack of independence and everything else, and vaccine mandates are starting to swirl around him right now like a black cloud. If all that happens and then on top of it on Tuesday, you see Terry McAuliffe go down in flames, Biden is a lame duck. He will have no further chutzpah that he can bring to bear for anybody. The Dems will look at him as being something that is literally dragging their party down. And I'm telling you right now, some of them already have buyer's remorse. I even saw an article this morning that said that Democrats are having buyer's remorse. I mean, it said that. And so what I'm telling you is, this is going to be, Tuesday is going to be a big, Biden's entire agenda, Biden's presidency right now is in such disarray. I don't think he knows which way is up. He has never led a thing in his entire life. I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. President Joe Biden has never led anything in his entire life. Is it any wonder right now that his agenda is in disarray? Well, when you've never led, when you've never had to organize, when you never started the business, when you never had to make a payroll, when you don't understand what it takes to actually motivate people to do something, when you've had the luxury of 40 years of going to the podium and having nothing but rhetoric and then walking away with no responsibility, well, now it's coming to bear. All right, folks, top of the hour here. We're going to be back in a minute with Matt Clark from the Center for Law and Liberty and sort of pick apart the legalities of what it means to challenge a federal mandate. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.